Hello and welcome to The Forecast, Seattle's weekly women's sports show here on KVRU 105.7 FM. I'm your host, Maggie Mertens. The Forecast is a new show here on KVRU where we're taking traditional sports radio and turning it on its head. That means we're here to cover the women's sports scene in Seattle. So listen to this show, The Forecast, for all your news about local teams named after the weather, like the storm, the rain, and the torrent. I think we're all feeling those names lately. And all of the other incredible women athletes with ties to the Seattle area. I am Maggie Mertens. I'm an independent journalist here in Seattle. The other half of this show is my producer, Jeff Scott Shaw. We've both been telling women's sports stories here in Seattle and nationally for over a decade. Together, we can't wait to not only update you with the Seattle women's sports news of the week, but also dive deeper into why women's sports matters, who's watching, who's playing, and what it all means. Stay tuned this hour because we'll be chatting with Ava Wood, 365 Hockey Girl, about the big week that the Torrent just had. We'll be chatting about what happened in the season opener for the Rain, talking about the never-ending WNBA CBA negotiations, and we'll be giving some hot takes, some spicier than others. We will also be interviewing Heather Tarr, University of Washington's softball coach, the team who just swept Maryland over the weekend. And to jump right in, we have a special treat. We just spoke with Ava Wood, 365 Hockey Girl. You might know her from social media. As the Torrent had a huge week this week, there were three games, Wednesday, Friday, and Sunday, and we got the down low from Ava. Ava, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Amazing. So Jeff and I were talking last week about how, you know, going into this week, the Torrent were kind of at the bottom of the table, but had, you know, three huge opportunities to really get some points. And they started off pretty good. We can start with the highs. I mean, what happened on Wednesday's game against the Boston Fleet?
Yeah, I mean, what a win. And, you know, the vibes in Climate Pledge Arena are absolutely immaculate. Like, with a sold-out arena coming back from the Olympics, and then 13,000 fans on a Wednesday. And that's what's crazy. Let's just start there, okay?
That's incredible.
On a Wednesday. It's easy to take for granted, but then you absolutely remember, like, that's not normal, low-key. Like, it's becoming normal, which is super impressive. But, like, for the first year of a professional women's hockey team, like, that's really impressive. So let's just start there. And, like, you're pulling that attendance when you're not even really, like, the best team. No shade. I love Torrent. Very impressive. So that's the first thing.
Completely. And then they were playing the top team in the league.
Exactly. great game. And, like, bro, Alex Carpenter. Let's talk about Alex Carpenter. Backhand goal. Like, when I saw that, like, I was like, if you're not watching Alex Carpenter at Climate Pledge Arena in Seattle, literally what are you doing? Because that is, like, top tier entertainment.
Absolutely. Yeah. She's been ridiculous.
Yeah, she's been amazing.
Yeah. So what was the final score there Wednesday?
I think it was 3-2 because Torrent came back late.
As they'd like to do, right?
They love to come back late. We also saw a jailbreak goal from Michaela Grantmentis. That was very exciting. That was very exciting.
Yeah, tell us what a jailbreak goal is.
Yeah, so the jailbreak rule is specific to the PWHL. So when you're shorthanded, so like basically when the other team takes a penalty, or sorry, when your team takes a penalty, one of your players will have to go to the box. So then you become shorthanded. And if you score when you're on the penalty kill, then you can free your player from the box.
It's so cool.
Yeah. So that kind of encourages a more like aggressive penalty kill.
What was the audience reaction when that happened?
Oh my God, it was absolutely crazy because, like, the great thing about the jailbreak goal is it takes the vibes from it's so over to it's so back. Like, that's like the biggest vibe shift possible, pretty much.
Yeah, so high drama. I think it's like a very high drama rule.
Yeah, I described it as, like, elite game design. It's like in a video game. Like, how could you engineer the game to be as entertaining as possible. So I think that's really cool.
That's amazing. Okay, and so we ended Wednesday night on a super high. We beat the Torrent, beat the top. Okay.
I want to also shout out Danielle Serdacki and Natalie Snodgrass, though.
Okay.
Because they had Natalie Snodgrass had the assist to Danielle Serdacki, and I just want to give a shout out to Danielle Serdacki because she's a player that is really interesting to me. Like, she's a player that was a really high – she was number two draft pick after Sarah Filliet in that draft and, you know, kind of didn't have the season in Ottawa that maybe she wanted or a lot of people wanted and, you know, was one of the first signings for this Seattle Torrent team. So she's a player that I think is really interesting and has a lot of potential, and I was really excited to see her get that goal.
That's amazing. Yeah. That's amazing. So there was like a little bit of hope because we got those 3 points against Boston. Then what happened on Friday against Minnesota?
Oh, yeah, they lost. Yeah.
They kind of continued their trend against Minnesota here, unfortunately.
Yeah, this matchup against Minnesota has been really interesting because not only did we lose to them in the first ever Torrent home game ever, right. You know, Torrent has never beat Minnesota Frost. And in fact, every time they've played Minnesota Frost, they've lost by a lot. Like,
they have our number. They have our number.
Like, I saw a stat and it was like, In those three losses to Minnesota, it was like the first time a PWHL team had lost to an opponent 3 times in a row by like 3 goals or more.
Ouch. So it's
like they really have our number, like in a historical sense. Like in a statistical and historical sense, they have our number. So that's a funny matchup, I think.
Okay. Well, that means, you know, we've got a rivalry brewing, I think. Sunday then, we end up playing the Toronto Scepters. There's maybe like one more chance here to get some points for the week. And you know, this one was another bit of a heartbreaker. What ended up happening against Toronto?
You know what, honestly? My hot take is that this wasn't actually that much of a heartbreak. Like, it was. Like, maybe right. That's a bad take.
Hit us with it.
Barnes got injured. I think that's the biggest heartbreaker, right? Yes. Caleb Barnes got injured, and that was a hit from Ella Shelton on Caleb Barnes. And there's been a lot of discussion online, like, was it legal, was it not legal? Obviously, there was no penalty called on the play. I personally think it was legal, but I think – because when you watch the replay, you know, they were both skating in the same direction. But yeah. I think the bigger issue here is when you look at the PWHL rules. Like, I can look at – I'm not a referee, okay? Let's say that first. I'm not a referee. But when I look at the rules, to me, that hit looks legal. And now we can have a discussion of, okay, well, how do we feel about the rules, right? This is – these – when you look at the PWHL rules, these are relatively new rules. Right. It's not like they can't change the rules. So do we like this hit? Do we not like this hit? How do we feel about the rules? And then when you look at the reffing.
Yeah.
There's obviously been a lot of discussions about maybe inconsistencies with the reffing. So I think that's the bigger issue here. Obviously, hoping that Caleb Barnes is okay because, as I said, she's a franchise player for this Seattle Torrent.
Absolutely.
She is our best defender. She is a genius in terms of, like, playmaking, you know, power play, things like that. So she's an extremely important player for this team and just hoping she's okay. Yeah, that's obviously heartbreaking. But as far as the actual manner in which Torrent lost, not one of their worst losses, in my opinion. Like,
True. It was close.
The Scepters, it was 1-0 pretty much the whole game, and then there was an empty net goal. So, like, yeah, it sucks. But I've been hurt more. You know?
We'll take that loss over a worse loss, over the Minnesota Freeze loss, let's say.
Yeah, it's fine.
And I know you've spoken a little bit about, you know, that this also might not be so heartbreaking because it might set up the Torrent to get a better draft pick. Can you explain sort of how that works in the PWHL?
Yeah, so the way that draft order is determined in the PWHL is via something called the gold plan. Now, a lot of people will say that the gold plan is meant to prevent tanking, and in a way it does, but in a way it doesn't. So let me explain how it works. So basically, okay. After a team is mathematically eliminated from playoff contention, that means there's no mathematical scenario in which they could make the playoffs. After they've been eliminated, then that team may earn gold plan points towards their draft pick order. So basically, every win, every like overtime win you accumulate after you've been eliminated, those points go towards your order. And remember, the points are like the 3 points for regulation win, 2 points for overtime win, 1 point for overtime loss. So essentially, the gold plan means that you can't tank after you've been mathematically eliminated. But the earlier you become mathematically eliminated, the more chances you have to earn gold plan points. It's also dependent on the schedule, your schedule at the end of the season. So I would have to go look up our schedule at the end of the season as well. But,
yeah. Torrent's not mathematically eliminated yet.
Torrent is not mathematically eliminated yet. And I also have to do the math on this, but I think it's actually pretty hard to become mathematically eliminated because of the 3-point scoring system, right? Like, theoretically, you could always go on a win streak of regulation wins until you can't.
Yeah. So it might be a really exciting end of season then. I actually do kind of like that, as opposed to just tanking, you know, just going from the bottom to the top. Like, because it is so easy. Like, you see it in every league, right? Of like, okay, well, we'll just give up now. We're seeing it a lot in a lot of places. We've seen it in the WNBA. Like, you know, it's easy to do, and it doesn't quite seem fair. So I do kind of like that. And it kind of does seem like it might benefit Torrent, who are a team that has a lot of fight. Like, you know, none of these losses are like terrible. We can't put anything together, even with all of our best players basically on the injured list right now.
Right. I agree. And like, I definitely think I'm hoping this is a team that can, you know, fight for that top draft pick at the end of the season. And I do, like, for what it's worth, I do really like the gold plan. I don't think Torrent is tanking on purpose. It's not like I look at Torrent and I'm like, oh, they're losing games on purpose. No, I think they're trying to win games. I think they're just not winning games. So I'm just looking at the bright side of, yeah, okay, maybe they could get that top draft pick.
Totally. Ava 365 Hockey Girl, you're on TikTok, Instagram, anything else?
YouTube. But what I really want is for you to subscribe to my newsletter and join my Discord, because, as you know, I'm really into zines. I view the 365 project as kind of like a DIY way for us to connect with each other and make information about this league accessible. So please sign up for my newsletter.
Yay. Is that 365 Hockey Girl too?
It's on Beehive, but the links are in all of my socials.
Perfect. Ava, thank you so much for joining us here on The Forecast, Seattle's weekly women's sports show. We'd love to have you on again sometime, and we hope you have a great rest of your week.
Thank you so much.
Thanks to Ava for bringing some of those immaculate vibes from Climate Pledge to The Forecast. We're going to jump into our other scores from this week. Starting with the Reign, who experienced some weather delays of their own. I, too, was caught in the Friday snowstorm trying to get out from SeaTac, as was the Reign, apparently, to Orlando for their game. And not only that, but then the game was delayed because of rain. Not our rain, the other kind of rain. but it turned out to really be a great season opener for us. We did talk about how this is a little bit of a rematch. Orlando Pride beat the Reign last season in the first round of the playoffs, and that was a bit of a bummer. And, you know, the Reign really came out swinging in this match and ended up winning 2-1. Jess Fishlock had an early goal in the 25th minute, which, you know, we love to see a veteran on the team just really like proving their worth. She had a just great hard press on the defense, you know, was just hanging out and got through that last defender. It was a pretty classic goal. Barbara Banda then, of course, equalized for Pride early in the second half, as she does. And then it was really amazing to see there in the 84th minute, midfielder Brittany Ratcliffe, who is a newcomer to the Reign this season. She was subbed in at 79th minute. 5 minutes later, hit a header that would win the game. Nerilia Mondesir had both assists for those two goals, so that's pretty exciting to see. I've got eyes on her for sure. Her teammates call her Coco, which is very cute, and I love also that she is the first ever Haitian-born NWSL player, so that's pretty cool. Ryan Brown from the Reign said at the press conference after that this team is really starting to click, and it really did look that way. That's really a lot what we talked about with Susie Rance last week too, from Sounder at Heart, that this is a team that, you know, we're seeing a lot of the same players, and they were a bit young last year, but, you know, hoping that all starts to gel. Then we had the March Madness draw on Sunday. University of Washington ended up with a 6 seed. How did you feel about that, Jeff?
That was maybe the best scenario. I think it's super, super fascinating that the women had a week off between their season, their conference tournaments, and then the bracket reveal. And I actually think it benefited a lot of teams in the bracket because it gave the committee a chance to like pause. They watched a lot of those championship games. They thought about it. Did that team pass the eye test? So I think UW benefited. They got a better seed out of it because some of the teams that were ranked higher in, you know, some of the earlier previous predictions, they fell. They lost in their conference tournaments, or they didn't make the championship game. They were maybe not as good as people thought they were. We'll see what happens.
We'll see. Other local news there, Gonzaga got the 12 seed. They'll play Ole Miss in the first round. But, you know, the one seeds are no surprises, really. UConn, UCLA, Texas, and South Carolina. And we will be chatting more March Madness brackets in depth on a special bonus episode we're going to be recording tomorrow. And so that will be showing up in your feeds if you subscribe to The Forecast. We'll be chatting with Jen Barnes from Rough and Tumble Pub, Angela Garbus, a best-selling author here in Seattle, and a huge basketball nerd, and Kristen Tollefson, who covers the Huskies for the UW Dog Pound on SB Nation and happens to be Jeff's partner. So tune in for all the March Madness previews there. The other news happening this week is that there is still no deal in the WNBA CBA. Despite marathon meetings since Tuesday between the Players Association and the owners, we have not heard really many good things coming out of those meetings. The last I heard was they were really desperately trying to get a deal done by Monday, March 16th, which is today as we record this, and we have not heard anything yet about a deal happening.
Wasn't the deadline the 10th of March?
It was, and then they kind of said, well, we can maybe squeeze it in, still get this preseason stuff going. But yeah, that's looking less and less likely, I think, that there's going to be on time start for sure. Which, you know, we will hopefully get some more information soon. Also in the basketball world, though, FIBA is going on, the World Cup qualifying tournament. In some kind of sad news, Dominique Malunga was injured in the France versus Colombia game, ended up getting diagnosed with a concussion and will be out for the rest of the tournament. So hoping that doesn't impact her storm season. Should there be a storm season? But, you know, head injuries are always scary. I'm glad they are taking protocol the way that they should, even if it means we don't get to see her dunk again in this tournament, sadly. Team USA, however, has been cruising. 4 straight wins, not really a surprise. The closest score so far has been 93-59, which was against Italy. But just really amazing to get to watch this future of USA basketball play together. Paige Beckers, Angel Reese, and Caitlin Clark on the floor at the same time is pretty amazing. They, you know, turn out. They're pretty good.
Just a little bit.
Just a little bit. They'll be playing Spain this Tuesday at 2 p.m. on March 17th. The 3-on-3 Champions Cup was also going on with FIBA. I don't know if you watched any of that, Jeff.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah, the USA dropped a stunner in the semifinal to Azerbaijan. Ended up winning bronze. Azerbaijan got second, and the Netherlands took first place in that. I don't know. What do you think? What do you think happened there?
I mean, 3-on-3 is so hard. In general, the style of play is very different. As we saw, like with the Unrivaled 1-on-1 tournament, like some of these other countries, you can find three players that are really good. You can play five players that are really good. So I just think like, I think it's a little bit of a taste of our own medicine too. Like the U.S. really pushed. In fact, Storm ownership for San Hoops is one of the key drivers behind 3-on-3 basketball getting into the Olympics. And then I think it's a little elitist to think like we're going to dominate as a country because there's really good basketball all around the world. And that's actually, I think, more enjoyable to watch.
Yeah. Yeah. Shakira Austin, Alicia Gray, Veronica Burton, and Naz Hillman were our team. And I thought, you know, maybe some of those folks were just a little tired from Unrivaled.
Maybe. I also think it's interesting because like
it's a different style too.
Different style. And not all of those players had played together on 3-on-3. It just is so different that I think unless you really have that experience, just because you're a good basketball player doesn't necessarily mean, you know, on the men's side of the game, a lot of players that would never run up and down the court or play really good defense are an amazing 3-on-3 basketball players.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, totally. It's a different thing. And yeah, it goes to show too that, you know, there is, of course, there's like massive depth on Team USA women's basketball, but there are specific needs, right? In the 3-on-3 tournament, which does, I think, I agree, it's super exciting.
I also think we should shout out for something that happened this week. I'm terrible at pronouncing names. Like, okay. I have a little bit of dyslexia, but the Moll sisters, are you familiar with the Moll sisters from the University of Washington? M-O-L-L.
Yes.
So I have no clue what is happening down in, I think they're from Olympia. Like, what is happening in Olympia? But whatever is in this family's bloodline with pole vaulting, whoever paid them, they need one, some car dealership, some local group or whatever needs to pay them a ton of money to represent Olympia or the state of Washington, University of Washington, because Hannah Moll just won the indoor NCAA pole vaulting championships again. And both of the sisters were just their twins, and they were just named Women's Sports Star of the Year by the Seattle Sports Commission. But I think Hannah won it as a freshman. Maybe her sister won it as a sophomore, and now she just won it as a junior. They're like dominant. Dominant.
Yeah. And they are, and it's crazy because they often too, like, don't they often like tie or like be within just like a tiny bit of each other?
Yeah.
Which is just so crazy.
Yeah.
It is. Yeah. They're incredible.
I mean, this is the third title in her career. See, this is where it's hard. It's like hard to find information on this, but like, she's the national champion in 2024. And there's indoor and outdoor, and I can never figure out what season is what, because it feels like it should be outdoor season, but this was an indoor title. But between the two of them, they hold multiple titles, and also I think sets them up for a run at the Olympics.
Two locals to keep our eyes on there, Jeff.
Anyways, but I just think someone needs to give them some props. You know, they got a little blurb in the Seattle Times, but like, and it's hard to find where to watch them and whatever, but like, congrats.
Yeah.
Hannah Moll. I hope I said your name right. We're very excited. I don't know why her sister wasn't competing in the indoors, but I hope that they're both competing in outdoors, and make it to the national championship. And like, they go the one time they went first and second. So I hope this year it's another family sweep, and they're like the most winningest, you know, pole vaulter, track medalists or whatever in the history of University of Washington or something.
All right, stay with us. We're going to take a quick break here, and then we will be back on The Forecast, Seattle's weekly women's sports show. We'll be interviewing Heather Tarr, UW softball's head coach. We'll be right back. Welcome back to The Forecast, Seattle's weekly women's sports show here on 105.7 FM.
Maggie.
All right.
Maggie, what's your very depressing hot take?
My very serious hot take is that it should not snow in March in Seattle, especially. I am done. I'm done being cold. I am ready to be outside. I am ready to be running outside, walking outside. I'm ready to complain that it's too hot when it's like 65 degrees, you know? I am done. I was supposed to go to the Bay Area this weekend on a flight, and I was supposed to be there for 2 days. I ended up there for less than 24 hours because my flight was canceled Friday. And anyway, it was a mess. And yes, snow is beautiful, and my children were very happy to have a snow day and get to build a snowman, etc. I, however, would have preferred that to happen last month or the month before. So yeah, I'm done. I'm done with that. I'm moving on. I'm going to just pretend it's spring now. And yeah, Jeff, you have a hot take that's actually about sports. So why don't you take it away?
And it sounds like you need to go to Phoenix for the women's Final Four.
I guess so.
Go get some sunshine. Okay, this is my hot take. I did not realize, I cannot find any information about this. I don't know where I heard this last year, but I was under the assumption or understanding that women's basketball tournament was done having the top 16 teams play host to the first two rounds, which would, they were going to move to towards having it be equitable, like the men's tournament, having neutral site games for the first two rounds. I had heard that. I don't know if that's in the works.
I heard that too. I feel like that might just be, maybe it's just not happening yet. I feel like I remember that too.
I can't find information. I was really excited. I kid you not. I was really excited all the way up to the bracket reveal this Sunday, thinking like, oh yeah, like no one's hosting. I wonder what, and like I looked it up and I was like, no. They released on Saturday the host sites for the top 16 teams. Mm-hmm. And I think that is, I have some choice words for the NCAA on this. I think the NCAA, someone needs to hold the NCAA's feet to the fire, because it's not about me, but I played Division II basketball and they don't do that for Division II men's basketball. They claim that it wouldn't be profitable for the women to play at neutral sites or whatever. Right? But
come on.
That there wouldn't be enough of a draw, that it would cost too much money to be resource intensive. However, they don't do that for men's Division II basketball. What they do is they have regional sites. So they take the top team from each region is the host. So you have one team hosting eight teams. I have no problem with the top teams in the region playing host. I do have a problem with a 3 or 4 seed, like TCU. Like UW actually got a really good draw and they're playing at TCU, but most of the brackets said that UW was going to have to go to LSU, who is the 2. It's not even the same competition when you're playing at someone's home.
No, it's not.
It's not a fair, that there's not parity when you have to travel across the country to play essentially a home game for somebody and they're only hosting 3 games. So like in Division II, they figured it out that if you're the top seed in your region, you play host to 8 teams.
Right.
And I feel like that's, you've earned the right to host for that tournament. They use resources at that school. NCAA pays for it. Like there's a whole thing. What they fly, I mean, because NCAA pays for travel, like it's a whole thing. They can coordinate it. It's not crazy. It would be amazing to see. Could you imagine UCLA, UConn, South Carolina, like hosting 8 schools?
Yeah.
You would have this epicenter of women's hoop. It would be great. And you are like, yes, those, the one seeds and the, you know, because there'd be regions. They would have a home court advantage, but the 3 or the 4 or the whatever would not always have a home court advantage. And so I think like it's such a cop out for the NCAA to not do that.
Yeah. And it's like, it's true that like UConn, like South Carolina, like these places have built institutions, right? Where there are a ton of women's basketball fans around.
Yes.
And if they're not even close, like they would make the trip there, right? And you'd get to see whoever you get to see, you know, and it's still, it would still be cool. Whereas, yeah, no, if you're just out there playing, you know, a home game for somebody else, is it even March Madness? Like, what's the, it's, it doesn't really make it different than like a normal game during the season.
March Madness is now women's March Madness, men's March Madness. You know, they're playing at the same time. There's a lot of this that I like actually like, but I just think the fact that we're going to have this huge tournament and we're still going to have teams hosting other teams, home court advantage. If your fans want to travel, great. But like the thing that makes March Madness, March Madness is the upset or the idea that everyone has, like, we're going to roll the ball out. We have 40 minutes. And if you have to like play in someone else's gym, or you know how many of those facilities have terrible visiting locker rooms? Like, I've been in some of these arenas, you know, even Climate Pledge, like there is still a pretty big gap between what the home team's locker room is like and the away team's locker room is like. And if you're having that played at LSU, at TCU, at, I mean, even like for all, like even at South Carolina, they're not like, our job is we're the host, but we're not going to make you comfortable. Right. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that is just like so inequitable. It's so frustrating.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think it's a great reminder that we often kind of applaud what's gone right. Right. And we assume, okay, things are fixed. Right. And I think it's the same. It's a really similar thing with like the CBA situation, is that I do not think most people in America know how much the WNBA players are making at this point. And I think if you told them, most of them would be appalled. And that this is like this is crazy. Like they are fighting for literally like 5 to 10% of what the NBA makes. They're fighting for that. Like, that is insane when we really sit down and think about it, right? Especially when they're proving, you know, we have this other thing you're bringing up, like, oh, well, they say they wouldn't be able to sell the tickets if they went to a certain place. Look at what Unrivaled just proved. They could take good basketball players anywhere and sell out an arena, right?
PWHL just broke another thing. NWSL, this Saturday and Sunday – NWSL records were set for the largest multiple times.
Yeah. And it's right. It's this whole idea that some of us have been saying for a long time, right? When you just market it, when you just tell people it's a hot ticket, they will make it a hot ticket. They will go, you know, when you know who these players are, when you see how good they are, you will go and you will pay money and you'll pay a lot of money at this point. And yet these players still aren't getting, you know, the benefit of the doubt in so many of these decisions that are being made by the institutions. And that includes the NCAA, for sure. For sure. Great hot take, Jeff. We are here talking with Heather Tarr this week. Heather Tarr is the head coach at University of Washington softball. The team just swept Maryland in a 3-game series. We spoke with Heather last week, and we wanted to bring you the full interview here this week so that you can get all excited for University of Washington softball season. Heather, thank you so much for being here with us.
Well, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Yes, so we're so excited to look forward a bit to the University of Washington softball season. I've been doing some digging, reading about you, talking with Jeff, and you know, he let me know that you were actually a member of the softball team 30 years ago when they made the College World Series. What was that experience like in 1996 for you?
Yeah, when I was a student athlete, you know, just growing up here, I actually didn't have the opportunity to even aspire to be a Washington Husky because they didn't have, you know, softball specifically. But my senior year in high school, we could all dream big as softball players growing up in the state of Washington. So that was something by the time our program had reached 4 years old, from 93 to 96 in my third year playing, was just something that we, I think, were designed to do. The coach mm-hmm. that I got to play for, Teresa Wilson, really put all of her knowledge and her, you know, passion behind the program, and she was well supported by the university. And so we athletes that got to help build the program were, I guess, foundational in that experience. And it was definitely something rewarding that we get to say we were the first team to ever do it. And now we get to live those, you know, live those foundations and all the legacies that were built before even we have today. But I was proud to be a part of that legacy.
That's incredible. And even more incredible that you then returned to the program as a coach. What was it about UW or this softball program in particular that made you, you know, think that you wanted to come back as a career?
Yeah. Well, for me, I was fighting like heck to be a part of the program. I graduated from Washington. I spent a year as a student assistant coach in my fifth year, if you call it that. And I got some foundations in coaching at a young age. And then I was lucky enough to become an assistant coach at a small Division I school in Northern California called the University of the Pacific, where Brian Colsey was the head coach and I was the assistant coach. It was a two-person staff for many of the years. Wow. And I got to live out my passion through his program. And lucky enough for me, when the opportunity came for me to try to get back here to the University of Washington, my alma mater, I had had enough experience to give me the confidence to believe that I could be the head coach at 29 years old, which I, looking back on it, I don't know how I even did this, to be able to convince the people that, were in the administration at the time that I could do it, but lucky me. And, I got to, you know, really carve my teeth and fail quickly, learn quickly after failing and be able to help our program after being in the head coaching role for 5 years to help bring that national championship that we all tried to get, you know, for the first 12 to 15 years of the program. So it was a long road, and now it's even longer, me being a part of it as a head coach. But I'm forever grateful for the people that believed in me, that gave me my first try at being a head coach at such a big job.
Yeah, that's amazing. 29 years old to get that. And then clearly their investment in you paid off. You know, you've been there for 22 seasons now. Tell me about just what's kind of the biggest difference that you see in terms of like the landscape of softball, college softball from then to now.
Yeah, I think my mindset has always been it's the biggest and best thing that you could ever do. And I think now the sport has had so much TV exposure, and not so much as, you know, men's and women's basketball and football, of course. Like, we don't have the bowl money. We don't have the like pot of money at the end, which the NCAA, you know, hasn't gotten to the point where softball gets that big, huge kickback. So you're not getting the front side investment. But for me personally and mentally, I've always thought this is the big time and this is the biggest and best thing that we could be doing in the sport of softball. Of course, there is the Olympics, but that's every 4 years. And that's such a small population gets to experience that. So for me, I've always felt it's big, but I think now the backing for it and the momentum behind it is commensurate with how big we all think it is. So we're on the front side of, I think, softball being able to, you know, become a very big, a big piece of what you see in college sports and how you see it maybe from the end of the season, looking backwards, and the popularity is growing.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So you've had some roster turnover in the last couple of years. The transfer portal seems to be just like the bane of everyone's existence these days in college sports. What do you attribute that to? And how do you plan to kind of maintain some more consistency over the next few years?
Yeah, I think that just speaks to what we just talked about. And that is that, you know, if you don't mean business and you don't have your stuff together, like, things can get ripped right out from under you, no matter how founded your cultures are or how, you know, big time you think you've gotten yourself to be. And I think we experienced some of that in 2024. We had a, you know, a season that was successful. We didn't achieve the things that our program has the standards of achieving. Of course, we made it to the NCAA tournament that year, but we didn't make it to the Super Regional and then on into the World Series, which is the last eight teams standing. So I think just coupled with the momentum that softball has behind it. And if you can leverage some of those spaces with NIL and, you know, people seeking out other people's players, you can succeed. And, you know, we kind of got sniped in like kind of a trifecta way. Like our culture wasn't right in that year. And we had a lot of really, you know, just great players that had maybe other ideas and other aspirations. And so we lost 9 of our starters going out of the 2024 year, coming into the 2025 year, and it left us with nothing. And we had 4 players that wanted to come back, and including or not including the freshman class that was very important to last year's rebuild. So we got sniped with it a little bit, but you know, we were able to maintain at least a base level of a standard of making it back to the NCAA regionals. So that is something that we're proud of, but certainly today's climate in sport is challenging from a transactional standpoint, and trying to combat some of that, but maintain the integrity of who we are and why we coach and why this program was built. And, but you still got to have the players. So we were able to regain a bunch of the players and do the things that we want to do. And we got to stay in the forefront as an institution behind softball. And that means, you know, supporting softball in the highest way you can. We're not quite there yet, but we got to grow it, and the administration is behind it. And, you know, in combination, we changed conferences from the Pac-12 to the Big Ten, which for softball is a little bit of a different climate, literally climate, weather-wise, but also too, in, you know, there's bigger things out there for the university financially. And we're now kind of on that climb, trying to seek some of those financial rewards of being a part of a conference like the Big Ten, which in time will trickle down to all sports, softball included. But for now, we're in a little bit of a chase for the arms and for the money and for the facilities and things. But we still have, you know, tradition. We have excellence. We have a university that is, you know, amazing, top 10 world university, competing for, you know, top 10 to, you know, national elite standards athletically.
Yeah, incredible. Yeah, the Pac-12 shift to the Big Ten, this has been a big problem or opportunity perhaps for the University of Washington and many other schools out here on the West Coast. What's the biggest shift been for just how has that impacted your players?
Yeah, I think a little bit of that. I didn't get to that when I was speaking of like when we had a major upheaval between 24 and 25 seasons is like, you know, really like people come to the University of Washington for what it has, the opportunities. And, you know, it was a West Coast based opportunity for people all across the country or all across the world for that matter. And I think there's an intriguing part about the West Coast, especially maybe if you grew up here, especially if you don't grow up here, there's some intrigue, there's some allure, and there's some want to be here. And the conference changing, we had a very north-south geographically aligned conference from, you know, Seattle being the most north to then the Arizona schools being the most south. And you could kind of spread your wings and get people to come here, whether they stay here from Washington or the Pacific Northwest or come from other regions. And that was why I think a lot of people wanted to be here. And now we're attracting students to the same university, to the same softball culture and opportunity, but now it's a more northern based climate. So I think just the money piece is our hope, of course, being aligned with a bunch of other, you know, elite academic institutions within the new conference we're in, and, you know, trying to combat that vibe that I think people have a negative connotation to the width of the travel that we are going to experience. But if you come to the University of Washington and you know the softball map and where people fall on the map in terms of softball, like we're an isolated geographic entity up here where we don't have a lot of, you know, places where we can travel easily to play. So we already had that as a school, but now, you know, we have 4 road trips that we'll take within our conference, which is the same as the Pac-12 was. It's just, where are we going on any given year? We're not going to every institution. We're going to, you know, 4 different ones. And one of those 4 is always either going to be UCLA or Oregon, which is normal if you say it's the Pac-12. But, you know, we're getting to go to different places. We go to Iowa and Michigan this year and Ohio State. So those are 3 places our program has very few times been to. Once we've gone to Michigan, but The other two, it'll be new. And then we go to Maryland. We make the Big Ten tournament. We get to go to Maryland. So it is far, wow. But again, like we're used to it. We're road dogs.
Yeah, that's across a few time zones for sure. What games and trips are you kind of looking forward to as the biggest tests of your program this year?
Yeah, I think certainly this Michigan trip that we're going to go on at the end of the month, we are on a week-long road trip. So we thought instead of coming back and forth twice, it is our spring break. So woohoo, we're going to spend spring break in Chicago and play Loyola Chicago in the midweek. But on the front side, we get to go to Ann Arbor, Michigan and play a 3-game series against a very good Michigan team, a Michigan program that has had a lot of success, much like our program. So that will be a great opportunity for us. And then we have the little middle of the week. We get to travel through Chicago, see that city. It's a wonderful city. I think most of our gals that come from the West Coast haven't really spent much time there, but we do have quite a few Midwest women that know that city and will help us enjoy it. And then we get to go to Iowa, which I've never been to Iowa. Actually, my mom's side of the family is from Iowa. So I grew up when I was younger, for Christmas, I'd get an Iowa Hawkeyes t-shirt or something. And one of my cousins wrestled for Iowa. So I have some foundations there and I'm super excited to see our team there. And we have two young women in our program actually from the state of Iowa.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah, there's so much coming up. And you guys are on a pretty good win streak right at the moment. You just swept Northwestern. What went well for you guys in those games?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. It was a great weekend for us because it was our first official home series. We played so many games on the road that we get to figure out who we are in different spaces for 4 weeks at a time. And then we get to finally come home and we got a chance to play Seattle University, who gave us a great battle on a Tuesday night. Night games are always just like so like hyped up in Husky Stadium. So that was really fun for our team to experience. And then Friday night against Northwestern was also another great opportunity for us. We had to deal with some weather at the end of the game, throughout the game. We had the rain coming down throughout the game. So that was a challenge, but we met it and accomplished the task, which was to not only win the series, but sweep the series. So just all things were pretty good for us. But I think what was really cool for our team, because we kind of have a lot of youth and we've mm-hmm. been relying, I think, on a few of our batters to succeed offensively. And in this series, we had a lot of contributions up and down the lineup. And I think it proved to a couple of our gals who have been holding it down for us the whole year that it's not going to be having to be up to them, and other people are contributing and coming through in timely moments. So that was what stood out the most. And then just, like I said, getting to play at home, we had the band out there on Sunday afternoon, and that's always just such a good vibe because it's a unique thing to our program is that we carry the band with us, and it's something that is a little bit kind of like our 12th man, having that behind us.
Oh, I love that. I love that. Nothing like a marching band. So we talked about how you've been in this role for so long, 22 seasons. The University of Washington softball program is extremely successful over this time. How do you maintain a culture like that for so long? Just personally, what do you kind of bring with you to come into every season thinking like what your goals are, but also, what you want to impart to these players?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing that I've been able to see throughout our program starting, being a part of the foundation, is the people is the most important thing. The alignment of the people is something that is the greatest challenge, but the greatest reward, and the alignment that you can create by having the right people on the bus, if you will, is the genius of it all. So having the staff that is in alignment, having the passion that we all have that can be fit like a puzzle piece together to the end, to be able to recreate that like annually and or like with a cohort of humans in their 4 years time is just one of the most fun things to try to do. So I think it's just alignment and just following the tradition and keeping up with the standards that the tradition has proven that we can do. It's so hard, but it's so rewarding to be able to do it with a group of women that are aged, every year, 18 to 22, and that never changes. So it's a challenging age to to reach, but it's very rewarding when those women can figure out how to be elite and excellent through, you know, just a little yellow ball that we try to run around a square to try to score points in.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things where, you know, I think college athletes and, you know, coaches of college athletes, you're doing so much more than just playing a sport, right? I mean, of course, you're a student as well, but you're at this time of life where you're really forming yourself and your own, you know, individuality. Do you have like any things that you draw on in terms of your own experience as a former softball player at UW when somebody's maybe going through a hard time?
Yeah, I think just being a balanced human is something that's really hard to keep in mind. And, you know, we come here for softball, there's no question, but the balance of the school does challenge you and it humbles you at times because it's not easy to be a student at Washington. Just the standards in the classroom and the expectations that you have of yourself while you're a student. And I think just also just rounding yourself as just a social human through the experiences that Seattle can give you. And a couple of our gals were at the Kraken game the other night, and two of our gals are from St. Louis. And so they were the only Blues fans in the arena. But just even those kind of things, keeping those main things the main thing, like trying to be a great human first. And then secondly, trying to compete in the classroom, which has very high standards, and, you know, like using those skills to become the best softball player you can in the 4 short years that you get to do this thing. And just really being grateful for the opportunity is something that there's a foundation left for us to do. So the gratitude that we have to be a part of the city, to be a part of the school, and just be humans that are trying to become elite in the environment that we are, is those are the things that we love to just repeat and do. And every single year it's a new group, but that's our mission, is to become the most durable and competitive versions of ourselves through our values and not try to lose yourself in it. Keep it fun and have fun, but not at the expense of winning.
Amazing. So tell me, Heather, you know, if somebody's coming out to a UW softball game this year, maybe they've never been to one before, what kinds of things should they be on the lookout for?
I think there's some things that you might see naturally, like the connection between the women on the field. If you have a chance, I would recommend trying to get on the first base side, because on the first base side, although you're standing above the dugout of the visitor, you can see into our dugout. And our dugout also has this pretty it's just different look. Like you can start to see the connections and the cheers, and there's a lot of intent behind what we try to do and how we try to do it and how we win. And I think you can see that best when you're on the viewing side of our dugout. You can't always be there. I know we need to have people on the third base side too, but just looking out for the joy that we have and for each moment, trying to win each pitch and trying to be connected, an intentionally connected unit, every single pitch that we get to play this game.
I also saw the unicorn make an appearance. Opening game against SU. I've seen bits and pieces of it. It feels like, is that showing back up now?
So the unicorn is something that, you know, you don't really have like a husky emoji on your phone. There's like a wolf looking thing. And then there's the cute dog with the two ears. It's brown and white, but we don't really have a representative of the husky. So we use the kind of, we call it purple. It's probably magenta, purple and white unicorn as our emoji. And there's other hidden meanings for the unicorn. We can have like an off hours of that. But the unicorn, it's called Cloud because it's blue and has cool little hairdo mohawk. But we have a few of them, but Cloud is the one that gets to be in the dugout. And when the gals hit a home run, they get to, you know, grab onto the Cloud unicorn and ride it back into the dugout.
I love it. I love it. Well, what's your biggest goal, I guess, for your team this season?
It is honestly like our why is to become the most durable and competitive versions of ourselves. And, you know, that is through our values, which is selflessness, accountability, toughness, confidence, and husky fever, that we try to find behaviors that we, you know, need to model and live by through those values. But course, like what we do is we try to win a national championship. This team is getting ourselves closer to that, And we've had like big climb, like I said, to get back to this point, to give us the chance to have the seeding at the end of the season in May that gives us a chance to host a regional, to then host a super regional. And it's a steep climb for us, for all the things, but those are the goals for us this year. And they're very big, but this team has a chance to actually see that and be able to realize that.
Well, thank you, Heather, so much for joining us here on the Forecast. Well, and we'll be keeping an eye on the Husky softball season.
Thank you so much, you guys. Appreciate being on here with you guys. Go Dogs.
Thank you so much, Heather, for joining us. The UW Huskies will be taking on North Dakota this Wednesday at 6 p.m. Looking ahead to this week, we will be watching the Rain on Friday. Rain take on the Thorns in Portland, so that'll be a big game. Torrent plays Montreal on Thursday and the Boston Fleet on Saturday. And March Madness will be kicking off. University of Washington plays South Dakota State on Friday, 11:30 a.m. If they win there, they'll play again on Sunday. Gonzaga fans, the Zags will be playing Friday, 12:30 versus Ole Miss. And the USLW Spokane Zephyr FC play on Saturday at 6 p.m. You can catch that on Peacock. That's our show for this week. Next week, we'll be talking more March Madness, and we'll be talking about the Seattle Majestics and women's tackle football. We'll also be releasing a bonus episode this week, so go to kvru.org and find the Forecast page, or you can find us on Apple Podcasts to get that full bonus episode where we will be talking about our March Madness brackets. Thank you so much for tuning in to The Forecast, Seattle's weekly women's sports show on KVRU 105.7 FM. Our show airs on Tuesdays at 4 p.m. and Wednesday at 9 a.m. on KVRU, or you can find us on your podcast feeds. I'm Maggie Mertens, your host. We're produced by Jeff Scott Shaw. Thanks to Crystal Fincher, Shannon Chang, and the rest of the staff at KVRU for broadcasting our show. We want to continue to hear from you as we get the Forecast going. Reach out with story ideas, comments, questions, your own hot takes. You can reach us at theforecast@kvru.org or on Instagram at Seattle Women's Sports. For more information on how to support KVRU, head over to kvru.org. We will be back next week with more women's sports.